Thanks for coming on, Nick.
Thank you.
It's only been a busy few weeks for you since the...
Yes, but this is my first reading from the book, so it's nice to do it back here.
Indeed, yes. And I'm sure people in the audience have got some questions, but the first one obviously is as a Bert Beck creative writing alumnus, and also somebody who's been involved in publishing other people, including Bert Beck students, and editing other people's works. How did the experience of being published through a big publisher and having your own work edited compared to actually being a publisher and editing other work? How do the two experiences compare?
It wasn't actually very painful. It's just that when you're dealing with a big company, there are many layers, so information gets lost sometimes. So there were certain edits I had to do twice, and I was certain I'd done them. I kept copies of all the edits I'd sent in, and then manuscripts sometimes would come back and they wouldn't have been changed. But it means it's because you're dealing with so many more people, you're not just dealing with one person. Because with the publishing work I do kind of the structural story edit, and hire freelance to do the copy editing. Sue sometimes does the job for me. So, and at each time we're dealing directly with the writer. So there are no levels to go through. And that's funny. That's much simpler, I think. Obviously, less money involved. But I was also lucky that there weren't that many edits to do on my manuscript, because I had I have a group of friends from Beck who I show work to, and we kind of comment on the work. And I have a really great retreat agent who, I mean, he's one of the best readers I know. He spots the problem straight away. So by the time we sent the manuscript in, you know, there wasn't really that much more to do. Just context, things that, I think one of the dangers when you're a writer is that you know the story and you know the history and you know the context. So there are things you don't put in. So there were things about qualifying to practice as a doctor or as a forensic pathologist that I didn't include because I took it as everyone knows and I had to add those bits in.
Have we got any questions from the floor? Oh, Dorothy.
The book is obviously set in Ghana.
Yes.
And did you, when you were writing it, did you think about whether it was going to be published here or in Ghana, or did you just write the story without thinking too much about the different sort of cultural things?
Yeah, I mean, I just write the story. I mean, it's a story first. I think I write for the boy that I was. And then that's my audience. And if I can please him, I can please most people, because he is a really fussy kid. But I also realize that there are elements and layers of the story that will only kind of come to life for a Ghanaian reader. A lot of the names have double meanings, or the names, what seem like simple names, actually have meanings, and things like that. But there are things that you can read the book without knowing them. And I've always been interested in the kind of multi-layered narrative, even with my poetry. I like things to be simple on the surface and have complexity beneath them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you also, a lot of our guest writers have worked in many different media. We've had artists who are also novelists, and last month we had Blake Morrison, who's a memoirist and a novelist. How do you kind of balance, or how do you compare the poetry with the novel writing? That's such a big question.
We're two different things, except, well, I'd say novel writing at some point, you know, you're going to have to fight yourself. There's a certain level of discipline that poetry doesn't ask of you unless you're writing the Iliad, you know, which is kind of big. But, you know, when you're writing a novel, because of the volume you're dealing with and the fact that you're dealing with plots and stories and sub-stories and they need to be resolved and you need to keep track of them and bring them together, you can't just get lost in it. As much as you're enjoying the writing process, you also have to keep these strands together in your head. And I think that's, for me, that's what the difference is. But I find it great to take a break from fiction by writing poetry and vice versa, so they kind of sit side by side.
Question.
How does it go about that process with the strands? Do you have it sort of mapped out beforehand, or is it a sort of organic process you go through? Or?
I start, I start very much from images. So I started this book with a couple of images, and I started writing. I tend to start writing short stories as well as novels from the middle, because I find it makes me ask the questions I need to answer at the beginning. And so I just write, and by answering those questions, layers start to come together. And I think I finally get the plot when I'm 3/4 of the way through. I'm not very good at plotting, because I don't like structure. I've always rebelled a little bit against structure.
Well, in terms of the novel, it's set up as a detective novel, which is a sort of classic structure.
Yeah.
But in a way, it seems you're sort of counterpoising that and sort of city against the rural and kind of the fantastic. Was that a deliberate thing that you set out to do, or did that just emerge?
You see, this is the thing, I don't see them as conflicts, I don't see them as opposites, I just see them as things, strands that run side by side. So, I mean, yes, the reviewers and people reading them and interviewing me always say it's this versus this, but actually, they live side by side all the time. So why is it? It's like a classic question that people say, are we going to all start reading books on you know, e-readers? And so, I mean, printed books, are they going to go away? But I think they're going to live side by side, and that's, you know, what sometimes we forget when we're kind of looking at these questions. And for me, I mean, the kinds of things that happen in the novel were things that were everyday conversation in Ghana growing up. And if you live even in the city, in Accra, you can have a little bit of the village right next to you, just because somebody who lives next door still very much does it. I mean, one person has a gas stove, one person cooks with a coal pot. Somebody has some flashy or self-time thing. You know, you have the different strata of society, very rich people, people who just manage, and people who are very poor. And so you get all the modes of living side by side. So I didn't set that up as a conflict, but the structure I did deliberately put in of the detective novel, because I was really interested in writing a story about power and abusing the domestic situation, but because it was being written from, it was being written backwards, everything had happened, so it would all be telling. And I was conscious of the fact that I couldn't ask a reader to just sit down and just, you know, read this thing. So by putting this to run as a counter current, it set up a tension so that story could live. Okay.
Question at the back there?
Well, I felt that the view from the city, because Keo is ill at ease with who he is, I didn't feel like first person. It's not a deliberate choice, I just felt it. Like, it didn't feel like he would be a first person person. So it was a third person, and I think in a way that makes it possible to convey his unease and a little better. And if it was, I think if it was in first person, he would be a bit too self-absorbed in a way, because he's got issues. And you see the hunter is a much surer person. He's old, he knows who he is, he knows his place in society. He has no doubts about it, he's very confident. And I think when you have a confident narrator, or if the character that you've created is a confident character who knows where they are, then first person works better. Unless, of course, you're trying to highlight their instability, like Sorbello does, you know, which is, you know, so it depends on what you're trying to do, really.
Oh, question in James?
It's a tricky one.
Yeah.
Which voice did you enjoy writing more? Which one flowed the easiest? Which one did you yearn to be writing in when you were writing in the other?
Actually, I enjoyed both of them immensely, because neither of them is my natural voice. So, because the hunter's voice is a transliteration of Cree. Now, Cree is like my third language. So, Ghana's my first language, English is my second, and Cree is my third language. I encountered Cree when I moved to Ghana when I was 5, and in school, everybody. So, it's a third language for me, and his voice is a transliteration of that language. So I'm using the structures of that language, even though I'm writing in English. And in Kale's voice, what I did was it's much more staccato voice than my normal kind of prose. So in both of them, I had something that I was doing. So it was kind of fun because I was testing myself. Yeah.
Oh, question from Sue.
Yes.
You're involved in lots of different activities.
Yes.
Are they all equally important to you, or in an ideal world, would you focus on one?
In an ideal world, I'd be able to operate without sleep and do them all. Having said, I've recently become a father, and I think that kind of takes precedence over everything. So all my work is slipping these days. I think they all, it's different parts of me. And, I come from a management background, and I love aspects of that, and making things happen, and being able to nurture talent, because I know how frustrating it is when you're out there trying to make it. And I was a performance poet. I was on the road maybe 7 months in a year, in the first couple of years, just doing performances, reading, selling books and CDs just to kind of make ends meet. And so I know it's difficult. And I know that, I also know that big publishers are not deliberately ignoring people, but there's no capacity. And big publishers started as small publishers, and you need to continue having small publishers to kind of bring new voices out. So I can't really let it, I can't let any of them go. Not really. That was a question.
Okay, one final question,
your novel, the characters all talk English with each other, or they talk in some local
aftermath? When they're talking to each other, they're talking in Cree, but it's all written in English.
Right, so how do you manage that? Do you do more literal translation, or translate in a more...
It's a mix. What I try to do is maintain the structures of the Ghanaian language, the Cree, while writing in English. But in some cases, it's too awkward. You can't kind of manage it, so you have to compromise. So it's not perfectly done, but majority of it is a transliteration. So it's the sentence structures, the positioning of the object and the subject are based on Cree. That kind of thing. But it's not. Yeah.
Right, any final questions? One down
Are there any authors that you would acknowledge as influencing your prose?
There are writers who I've acknowledged my admiration of, but I haven't tried to emulate. Or consciously try to emulate any. one of them is Mariam Aba. She's a Senegalese writer. She died in the 80s. And had a book called So Long, A Letter. It's actually quite a small book, and the whole book is a letter. Saul Bellow, I love some of his work. Walter Mosley, I think, conveys so much in a sentence. Incredible stuff. Of course, there are recent writers like Arundhati Roy, whose prose is poetic and therefore I like, and some similar people who are probably older and more American, Pat Conroy. There's a whole range of people, and I think I don't focus on anyone's work, so I found it hard to pinpoint. Actually, that was one of the problems with my book, I'm told, when it was being sold, because most publishers said we can't compare it to anything, so they didn't know how to market it. So it went through a few before Random House picked it up. So I guess I'm just kind of schizophrenic.
Okay, well, Nana, I think you've got the record for the number of questions on the floor, anyway. We've got a blue plaque up there for you. Thanks so much for coming along.
Thank you.
And as I reflect, I'm going to stimulate the literary economy. There is books down here. And James is holding up the blue tip,
which recommended.
Exactly. So we'll have a short break. And see you back after that. Thank you very much.